This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, 29th of June, 2023. Markets pretty sideways yesterday. There was a bit of a scare around that AI chip restriction news item, the idea that the Biden administration is set to limit export of key AI chips to China. You covered that in an article yesterday, Peter. You can find it on analysis.saxo. I'm not sure if NVIDIA closed positive on the day, but it certainly didn't close much down relative to where it was trading before the open. So that story not getting a lot of traction, and some of the more speculative space was bouncing back pretty solidly, even though the headline was pretty much unchanged. Really low volatility, VIX, et cetera. It feels like the market is lacking some inspiration here, certainly not finding it in the U.S. yield curve, where we see 2 years and 10 years just absolutely frozen in a range for, well on 2 weeks, maybe into quarter. But I think, Peter, you would argue, at least you did in the morning call, that it's this next earnings season that we have coming up, starting, I guess, mid-July, that's going to be really key here.
Yeah, I think the equity market is at a crossroad here, because you had that AI wobble yesterday, the news. There's absolutely no way that the NVIDIA can escape this fragmentation game between the US and China. So I think there are considerable risks to their outlook. You had Powell in his speech in Sintra, the central bank conference yesterday, saying, we could hike further from here and keep them higher for longer. So the market was also absorbing that news. And I think given that, it was a surprise that we traded where we traded, actually, as you said, with the low energy. And you had, as you can see here on slide two, we have automobiles and components being the big driver of yesterday's performance. And that, of course, was Tesla. So the animal spirits are still very present in the equity market. Very high expectations going into that earnings season, as you mentioned, John. I'm really, really looking forward. I mean, can they really deliver on that? I mean, if you look at the forward earnings multiples in the US equity market, they're really aggressively set compared to all other equity markets around the world. And I'm still looking at that 4%. And the reason why I mentioned this, that we are at a crossroad, it is we have these high expectations, we have these high equity valuations, we still have that long end of the US yield curve that is behaving a little bit odd, I would say, given some of the signals we're getting on the economy and potential inflation. And I think it was Bill Gross that was out saying yesterday, he was also looking at the US 10-year yield to break that 4%. And maybe that is the path that will change the dynamic in the market if we can get above that 4% level.
Yeah, we've talked about that. I mean, the long end of the yield curve, if it's, it's really an injection of volatility, has to come from one of two directions, arguably. Some sort of material deterioration in the outlook for the economy, which impacts corporate profits, that the usual sort of recessionary dynamics, bad news is bad news, defensive posture. Or I would argue, and I think you would agree, like you said, and Bill Gross said, this long end coming up higher, the idea that this complacency around inflation is misplaced, and that we break higher at the long end of the yield curve. Also, maybe the dynamics around treasury supply because of the unsustainability of debt, that's another route. And we're just not getting answers, as I mentioned, from the yield curve, just absolutely frozen in ranges. We can't draw any conclusions from what's going on there just yet. But it does seem, Ola, that gold has really been troubled here by, and I was wondering if there's any link into the grain market, that huge correction back down lower, maybe pulling back a little on the inflationary threat from the food side, helping to pin this idea that, this disinflation is going to continue. Therefore, these current rates are becoming ever higher in a real sense if you look out the curve. And that is what's pressuring gold really at these critical levels around 1900.
Yeah, that's probably part of the story. And I think just generally that the animal spirit that Peter talked about in the stock market, it just doesn't want to lay down. That basically means there's not really a need for alternatives at this point in time. And when you have real yields as high as they are, because people are still firmly, or the markets firmly believe that the central bank will be successful in getting inflation under control, thereby forward inflation expectations are still very low. These are all just conspiring to add some downward pressure. And you mentioned the grain market. It's been an absolutely unbelievable rollercoaster we've seen this past couple of weeks. I put out a note on Tuesday just highlighting some of the developments there, and there's a lot of speculative interest going into these really big gyrations. speculative community quote woefully unprepared for the rally that started when the drought started really to become an issue a few weeks ago, a month ago, and now they've finally filled up their boots with long position, and the rain comes and they get caught out, and then we see this big reversal that we've seen in the last couple of days. So it just highlights also markets really not knowing what foot to stand on. But gold is absolutely in critical, quite critical level here, or just above 1900. And if I should just carry on the commodity space, a similar key level we're also watching in the crude oil market, 71.50. And Brent, we kissed that yesterday, and before bouncing late in the day when the U.S. inventory report showed quite a big drop in crude oil stocks. But what was also interesting was basically that the implied gasoline demand was at the highest level since December 2021. Jet fuel demand was at the highest since 2019. So where is that recession? It's most certainly not that people are not getting off the roads at this point in time. So it's going to be an interesting one to follow.
Yeah, and you talked about the jet fuel. I mean, I don't know whether we talked about it on the podcast actually a couple of days ago, but there has been a remarkably strong price performance in the U.S. airliners, and it was coupled with, I think it was coupled on the day when we had strong U.S. Consumer confidence, and at the same time that day we had the lower oil prices. So it's an interesting setup here for airliners with as you said, there's high demand because people want to fly, but there's also available supply, so the prices are not going a lot higher.
No, exactly, and so we are in terms of the oil market, which is such a massive input to everything on slide four here. As you can see, we are caught between the rock and a hard place right now, and not really going anywhere. But what would happen if we break below 71.50? Where would that leave Saudi Arabia and their recent production cut? What would they do next? Or would they step up their efforts to support prices? Are we looking for that for a pickup into the autumn if the recession is avoided in the US and if China does more on the stimulus front? So again, a make or break quarter is coming up, I think, for the oil market.
Yeah, and then a little bit on the private demand side of things, I saw a couple of interesting charts, somewhat conflicting, circulating around about the degree to which this huge excess in savings and income that was built up during the pandemic, how much of that has been sort of drawn down. So consumer balance sheets, in other words, and to what degree that's effectively getting neutralized now or not for another few months. Arguably, it's within this time frame now. And so people are starting to live a bit more on credit. And so we are getting towards the later part of the cycle. But how late are we? Is it not until 2024? People are getting really excited about the weekly jobless claims releases. Those have been going higher recently. We get another one today. But yeah, some of these coincident indicators, present situation, consumer confidence, the oil demand, et cetera, just not showing signs that this economy is particularly cooling. Okay, so while we're frozen in interest rates, we did get a little bit more action in FX. The dollar's pretty firm here, and quite notably so against some of the commodity currencies. I think in Asia, a lot of that's linked to this ongoing weakening in the renminbi. But the big mover yesterday was sterling on some rhetoric from the Bank of England at that central conference that ECB, or forum, whatever they call it, that the ECB hosts. With the chief economist Pill saying, look, we're starting to see some transmission of our monetary policy into private rents. The inference being that, you know, if we're seeing policy transmission, that means they're going to be a little bit more patient with further rate hikes because they're starting to see it getting some traction here. And we did see the rates at the front of the UK yield curve coming back in lower. Bailey as well. Headline inflation is going to go fall sharply this year. So we did see a bit of an adjustment in yields. Because of Sterling's pretty solid run of late, we saw some further unwinding of that rally yesterday. Pretty sharp and getting pretty interesting. So if you look at slide three, you can see that cable chart. So Sterling versus the dollar, if it's struggling below 126, really starting to reverse out that last wave, although really to fully reverse it, we have to work below 125.
Yeah, and I think it's coming back to the central banks and you know, the comments from Powell. There's also all these comments that have come out of the ECB that they want to continue hiking rates. There was a little bit of a debacle in Italy. Some of the politicians in Italy talking about the ECB cannot hike rates further from here. It will cause a recession in Italy. And of course, Italy is the weakest link in Europe because of their debt leverage. But their debt leverage is on the government's balance sheet and not on the private balance sheets. That's always been the case in Italy. But I wanted to say as well that I've noticed and a growing chorus of people arguing for that the ECB should not cut should not continue to increase interest rates, that they will do a policy mistake. And I still find it a little bit interesting, given the changing global supply chains, the fragmentation game, the green transformation, energy arguably going to be a more expensive source for the economy than it has been in the past. And then a lot of the labor markets in the US are still extremely tight. So that's why I don't get this this group of people that are arguing that the ECB is making a policy mistake if they're hiking interest rates, because you have several European labor markets that are at an employment rate right now that is far below the 15-year average, so below the structural levels we have seen. That's tightness. Scholz were out doing an immigration deal with Kenya, like Denmark did with Turkey in the 1960s, where they, quarter of a million workers will come from Kenya to work in Germany, because they are afraid they don't have enough hands, exactly. And that they are fearing that there will be a price spiral on wages. Hello, that doesn't really rhyme. We should stop cutting interest rates. That tells you that we have a problem in the labor market. And wages. And
especially in the Eurozone, because of the upside down demographics and the small exactly. labor force. Really interesting stuff, big picture stuff, but maybe zooming back into the day-to-day stocks to watch. We've seen a couple of earnings reports, quite interesting, especially from Micron late yesterday. I suppose that maybe helped to cheer a sentiment a bit in late trading. That one and then the H&M this morning.
Yeah, if we start with Micron, they reported better than expected revenue outlook. They're saying that the industry has turned a corner, inventory is being cleared. Pricing is expected to improve in the quarters to come. They did guide that the quarter they're in right now, the fiscal quarter they're in right now, that they will deliver their third straight quarter of negative growth margin, which is insane. Think about selling products below what you spend on producing the items. That's pretty
below cost is not a good business model.
It's not a good business model, but things are luckily improving. They did also say as well that the Chinese security concerns over their memory chips, which have caused a lot of headwinds for Micron's business in China. So this tit for tat, and we should stay with that theme before we go talk about H&M. As you rightly said, John, we flagged Nvidia yesterday. I don't see any possibility for Nvidia to stay neutral. The CEO and co-founder Jensen, he wants to remain neutral in Nvidia. He talks a lot about their ability to do business. Completely, if you ask me, ignorant and ignoring the what is going on geopolitically in the world, and as we talked about yesterday, this massive ramp up in Chinese demand for Nvidia's modified chips, and a lot of industry experts are saying they haven't really modified a lot. It's still very powerful chips, right? And the U.S. Commerce Department have probably got a hold on of this trend, and I think they will go and toughen these export controls, because AI is too an important technology to have Nvidia running around playing games with these rules, because it goes against, I think, the intention of the initial export controls that were enacted back in on the 7th of October.
Yeah, but that's those chip redesigns, they enable a direct export to China, of course, because supposedly they've weakened the chip. I recall a company here that also during the Soviet Union days had to weaken some of the technology, so they would send a version to this, allowed to sell to the Soviet Union. But what limits them? I mean, you still have this signs that Russia is certainly able to access all kinds of things via third parties, whether it's there's thoughts that it's via Turkey or other former CIS states. Why couldn't the chips be simply sent to a third country that then re-exports them to China?
Yeah, just like oil is flowing through Malaysia. Why couldn't chips flow through Singapore and then on to China? Yeah, I agree, and that's why...
Maybe that's why the market's complacent, in other words. I'm just thinking.
It could be. Yeah. But it's worth noting that the Nvidia stock's share price was down 12% over four trading days the last time we had the backlog of these export controls. Just have it on your radar. It's a good idea. And then H&M. What a story. For 5 years, I've been treading water. Management have failed to find its way in the fast fashion retailing industry. We had the success of Inditex, then we had the rise of e-commerce that grabbed a lot of market share. Then we had the I actually forgot the name of it, this Chinese company that is growing extremely fast on the fast retailing. Okay, that will come to my mind later. But shares are up 11% because H&M is reporting a much better than expected Q2 operating income. And And they're also putting in a small little note there that they're saying a 10% operating margin is very likely for the next fiscal year, and that's ahead of the schedule for H&M. And they have also been able to reduce their inventory by 20% with no meaningful increase in markdowns compared to a year ago. So I think the market is taking this as H&M is really turning around as a business. And as you can see here on slide 5, we have a 5-year price chart here. It's really galloping higher here and coming back to some meaningful levels that is, you know, pricing in a more rosy future.
All right, now let's go to the macro calendar to round out the slide deck. On slide 7, Swedish Riksbank, they hiked 25 basis points. That was largely expected. There were a few expecting one of those 50 basis point moves like we saw from the Bank of England and from Nordea's Bank. After all, Swedish inflation has been very aggravated and we've seen a very weak currency. More interesting later, the German flash CPI, although I think the Eurozone one tomorrow is more important with that core number for the flash June CPI there. We did just get the headline stuff out of Germany today. And then the May PCE inflation as well. Can that, you know, get something going in this U.S. yield curve? The latest jobless claims, the big surprise there, I think, would be either a big acceleration, of course, but especially if it just drops back down into the range it was in previously. So we'll stay tuned for that, again, whether it triggers any volatility. And remember that we do have end of quarter coming up. That could also just aggravate, at least intraday, some of the portfolio rebalancing, aggravating volatility on intraday basis across asset class. So keep that one on your radar as well. And we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.